Welcome to Science, Ethics, and the Future, the podcast of the Foundational Research Institute, foundational-research.org. I'm Brian Tomasek. Today I'll be reading the text of an essay called Thoughts on Robots, AI, and Intelligence Explosion by me, Brian Tomasek. It was written in May 2014. Thoughts on Robots, AI, and Intelligence Explosion. Summary. Artificial intelligence, AI, will transform the world later this century. I expect this transition will be a soft takeoff in which many sectors of society update together in response to incremental AI developments, though the possibility of a harder takeoff in which a single AI project goes foom shouldn't be ruled out. If a rogue AI gained control of Earth, it would proceed to accomplish its goals by colonizing the galaxy and undertaking some very interesting achievements in science and engineering. On the other hand, it would not necessarily respect human values, including the value of preventing the suffering of less powerful creatures. Whether a rogue AI scenario would entail more expected suffering than other scenarios is a question to explore further. Regardless, the field of AI ethics and policy seems to be a very important space where altruists can make a positive-sum impact along many dimensions. Expanding dialogue and challenging us-versus-them prejudices could be valuable. Introduction. This piece contains some observations on what looks to be potentially a coming machine revolution in Earth's history. For general background reading, a good place to start is Wikipedia's article on the technological singularity. I am not an expert on all the arguments in this field, and my views remain very open to change with new information. In the face of epistemic disagreements with other very smart observers, it makes sense to grant some credence to a variety of viewpoints. Each person brings unique contributions to the discussion by virtue of his or her particular background, experience, and intuitions. To date, I have not found a detailed analysis of how those who are moved more by preventing suffering than by other values should approach singularity issues. This seems to me a serious gap, and research on this topic deserves high priority. In general, it's important to expand discussion of singularity issues to encompass a broader range of participants than the engineers, technophiles, and science fiction nerds who have historically pioneered the field. Is the singularity crazy? In fall 2005, a friend pointed me to Ray Kurzweil's The Age of Spiritual Machines. This was my first introduction to singularity ideas, and I found the book pretty astonishing. At the same time, much of it seemed rather implausible to me. In line with the attitudes of my peers, I assumed that Kurzweil was crazy, and that while his ideas deserved further inspection, they should not be taken at face value. In 2006, I discovered Nick Bostrom and Eliezer Yudkowsky, and I began to follow the organization then called the Singularity Institute for Artificial Intelligence, SIAI, which is now MIRI, the Machine Intelligence Research Institute. I took SIAI's ideas more seriously than Kurzweil's, but I remained embarrassed to mention the organization because the first word in SIAI's name sets off insanity alarms to listeners. I began to study machine learning in order to get a better grasp of the AI field, and in fall 2007, I switched my college major to computer science. As I read textbooks and papers about machine learning, I felt as though narrow AI was very different from the strong AI fantasies that people painted. AI programs are just a bunch of hacks, I thought. This isn't intelligence, it's just people using computers to manipulate data and perform optimization, and they dress it up as AI to make it sound sexy. Machine learning in particular seemed to be just a computer scientist's version of statistics. Neural networks were just an elaborated form of logistic regression. There were stylistic differences, such as computer science's focus on cross-validation and bootstrapping, instead of testing parametric models, made possible because computers can run data-intensive operations that were inaccessible to statisticians in the 1800s. But overall, the work didn't seem like the kind of real intelligence that people talked about for general AI. This attitude began to change as I learned more cognitive science. Before 2008, my ideas about human cognition were vague. Like most science-literate people, I believed that the brain was a byproduct of physical processes, including firing patterns of neurons. But I lacked further insight into what the black box of brains might contain. This led me to be confused about what free will meant until mid-2008, and about what consciousness meant until late 2009. Cognitive science showed me that the brain was, in fact, very much like a computer, at least in the sense of being a deterministic information processing device with distinct algorithms and modules. When viewed up close, these algorithms could look as dumb as the kinds of algorithms in narrow AI that I had previously dismissed as not really intelligence. Of course, animal brains combine these seemingly dumb subcomponents in dazzlingly complex and robust ways, but I could now see that the difference between narrow AI and brains was a matter of degree rather than kind. It now seemed plausible that broad AI could emerge from lots of work on narrow AI, combined with stitching the parts together in the right ways. So the singularity idea of artificial general intelligence seemed less crazy than it had initially. This was one of the rare cases where a bold claim turned out to look more probable on further examination. Usually extraordinary claims lack much evidence and crumble on closer inspection. I now think it's quite likely, maybe about 65%, that humans will produce at least a human-level AI within the next maybe 200 years, conditional on no major disasters, such as sustained world economic collapse, global nuclear war, large-scale nanotech war, and so on, and also ignoring anthropic considerations. The singularity is more than AI. The singularity concept is broader than the prediction of strong AI, and can refer to several distinct sub-meanings. Like with most ideas, there's a lot of fantasy and exaggeration associated with the singularity, but at least the core idea that technology will progress at an accelerating rate for some time to come, absent major setbacks, is not particularly controversial. Exponential growth is the standard model in economics, and while this can't continue forever, it has been a robust pattern throughout human and even pre-human history. Miri emphasizes AI for good reason. At the end of the day, the long-term future of our galaxy will be dictated by AI, not by biotech, nanotech, or other lower-level systems. AI is the brains of the operation. Of course, this doesn't automatically imply that AI should be the primary focus of our attention. Maybe other revolutionary technologies or social forces will come first and deserve higher priority. In practice, I think focusing on AI specifically seems quite important, even relative to competing scenarios, but it's good to explore many areas in parallel to at least shallow depth. In addition, I don't see a sharp distinction between AI and other fields. Progress in AI software relies heavily on computer hardware, and it depends at least a little bit on other fundamentals of computer science, like programming languages, operating systems, distributed systems, and networks. In addition, AI shares significant overlap with neuroscience. This is especially true if whole brain emulation arrives before bottom-up AI. And everything else in society matters a lot too. How intelligent and engineering-oriented are the citizens? How much do governments fund AI and cognitive science research? I'd personally encourage less rather than more. What kinds of military and commercial applications are being developed? Are other industrial backbone components of society stable? What mimetic lenses does society have for understanding and grappling with these trends? And so on. The AI story is part of a larger story of social and technological change, in which one part influences other parts. A soft takeoff seems more likely. Various thinkers have debated the likelihood of a hard takeoff, in which a single computer or set of computers rapidly becomes superintelligent on its own, compared with a soft takeoff, in which society as a whole is transformed by AI in a more distributed, continuous fashion. The Hansen-Yudkowsky AI-Foom debate discusses this in great detail. The topic has also been considered by many others, such as Remes Nam and William Hertling. For a long time, I inclined toward Yudkowsky's vision of AI, because I respect his opinions and didn't ponder the details too closely. This is also the more prototypical example of rebellious AI in science fiction. In early 2014, a friend of mine challenged this view, noting that computing power is a severe limitation for human-level minds. My friend suggested that AI advances would be slow and would diffuse through society rather than remaining in the hands of a single developer team. As I've read more AI literature, I think this soft takeoff view is pretty likely to be correct. Science is always a gradual process, and almost all AI innovations historically have moved in tiny steps. I would guess that even the evolution of humans from their primate ancestors was a soft takeoff, in the sense that no single son or daughter was vastly more intelligent than his or her parents. The evolution of technology in general has been fairly continuous. Of course, it's not guaranteed that AI innovations will diffuse throughout society. At some point, perhaps governments will take control, in the style of the Manhattan Project, and they'll keep the advances secret. But even then, I expect the internal advances by the research teams will add cognitive abilities in small steps. Even if you have a theoretically optimal intelligence algorithm, it's constrained by computing resources, so you either need lots of hardware or approximation hacks, or most likely both, before it can function effectively in the high-dimensional state space of the real world, and this again implies a slower trajectory. The hard versus soft distinction is obviously a matter of degree, and maybe how long the process takes isn't the most relevant way to slice the space of scenarios. For practical purposes, the more relevant question is, should we expect control of AI outcomes to reside primarily in the hands of a few seed AI developers? In this case, altruists should focus on influencing a core group of AI experts, or maybe their military and corporate leaders. Or should we expect that society as a whole will play a big role in shaping how AI is developed and used? In this case, governance structures, social dynamics, and non-technical thinkers will play an important role not just in influencing how much AI research happens, but also in how the technologies are deployed and incrementally shaped as they mature. It's possible that one country, perhaps the United States or maybe China in later decades, will lead the way in AI development, especially if the research becomes nationalized when AI technology grows more powerful. Would this country then take over the world? I'm not sure. The United States had a monopoly on nuclear weapons for several years after 1945, but it didn't bomb the Soviet Union out of existence. A country with a monopoly on artificial superintelligence might refrain from destroying its competitors as well. On the other hand, AI should enable vastly more sophisticated surveillance and control than was possible in the 1940s, so a monopoly might be sustainable even without resorting to drastic measures. In any case, perhaps a country with superintelligence would just economically outcompete the rest of the world, rendering military power superfluous. Besides a single country taking over the world, the other possibility, perhaps more likely, is that AI is developed in a distributed fashion, either openly, as is the case in academia today, or in secret by governments, as is the case with other weapons of mass destruction. Even in a soft takeoff case, there would come a point at which humans would be unable to keep up with the pace of AI thinking. We already see an instance of this with algorithmic stock trading systems, although human traders are still needed for more complex tasks right now. The reins of power would have to be transitioned to faster human uploads, trusted AIs built from scratch, or some combination of the two. In a slow scenario, there might be many intelligent systems at comparable levels of performance, maintaining a balance of power, at least for a while. In the long run, a singleton seems plausible. A singleton is what Nick Bostrom defined as a world order in which there is a single decision-making agency at the highest level. The reason I think it's likely is because computers, unlike human kings, can reprogram their servants to want to obey their bidding, which means that as an agent gains more central authority, it's not likely to later lose it by internal rebellion, only by external aggression. Will society realize the importance of AI? The basic premise of superintelligent machines who have different priorities from their creators has been in public consciousness for many decades. Arguably, even Frankenstein, published in 1818, expresses this basic idea, though more modern forms include 2001: A Space Odyssey in 1968, The Terminator in 1984, iRobot in 2004, and many more. Probably most people in Western countries have at least heard of these ideas, if not watched or read pieces of fiction on the topic. So why do most people, including many of society's elites, ignore strong AI as a serious issue? One reason is just that the world is really big, and there are many important and not so important issues that demand attention. Many people think strong AI is too far off, and we should focus on nearer term problems. In addition, it's possible that science fiction itself is part of the reason. People may write off AI scenarios as just science fiction, as I would have done prior to late 2005. Of course, this is partly for good reason, since depictions of AI in movies are often very unrealistic. As AI progresses, I find it hard to imagine that mainstream society will ignore the topic forever. Perhaps awareness will accrue gradually, or perhaps an AI Sputnik moment will trigger an avalanche of interest. I think it's likely that issues of AI policy will be debated heavily in the coming decades, although it's possible that AI will be like nuclear weapons, something that everyone is afraid of, but that countries can't stop because of arms race dynamics. So even on soft takeoff scenarios, there's probably value in thinking more about these issues well ahead of time, though I wouldn't consider the counterfactual value of doing so to be astronomical compared with other projects, in part because society will pick up the slack as the topic becomes more prominent. Intelligent robots in your backyard. Many nature lovers are charmed by the behavior of animals, but find computers and robots to be cold and mechanical. Conversely, some computer enthusiasts may find biology to be soft and boring compared with digital creations. However, the two domains share a surprising amount of overlap. Ideas of optimal control, locomotion kinematics, visual processing, system regulation, foraging behavior, planning, reinforcement learning, and so on, have been fruitfully shared between biology and robotics. Neuroscientists sometimes look to the latest developments in AI to guide their theoretical models, and AI researchers are often inspired by neuroscience, such as with neural networks, and in deciding what cognitive functionality to implement. I think it's helpful to see animals as being intelligent robots. Organic life has a wide diversity, from unicellular organisms through humans and potentially beyond, and so too can robotic life. The rigid conceptual boundary that many people maintain between life and machines is not warranted by the underlying science of how the two types of systems work. Different types of intelligence may sometimes converge on the same basic kinds of cognitive operations, and especially from a functional perspective, when we look at what the systems can do rather than how they do it, it seems to me intuitive that human-level robots would deserve human-level treatment, even if their underlying algorithms were quite dissimilar. Whether robot algorithms will in fact be dissimilar from those in human brains depends on how much biological inspiration the designers employ and how convergent human-type mind design is for being able to perform robotic tasks in a computationally efficient manner. Some classical robotics algorithms rely on mostly mathematical problem definition and optimization. Other modern robotics approaches use biologically plausible reinforcement learning and/or evolutionary selection. As a side note, in one YouTube video about robotics, I saw that someone had written a comment to the effect that this shows that life needs an intelligent designer to be created. The irony is that some of the best robotics techniques use evolutionary algorithms. Of course, there are theists who say that God used evolution, but just intervened at a few points, and that would be an apt description of the field of evolutionary robotics. Just as Earth's history saw a plethora of animal designs before the advent of humans, so I expect a wide assortment of animal-like and plant-like robots to emerge in the coming decades, well before human-level AI. Indeed, we've already had basic robots for many decades, or arguably even millennia if you go back to the ancient Greeks. These will grow gradually more sophisticated, and as we converge on robots with the intelligence of birds and mammals, AI and robotics will become dinner table conversation topics. Of course, I don't expect the robots to have the same sets of skills as existing animals. Deep Blue had chess-playing abilities beyond any animal, while in other domains it was less efficacious than a blade of grass. Robots can mix and match cognitive and motor abilities without strict regard for the order in which evolution created them. Is automation for free? When we use machines to automate a repetitive, manual task formerly done by humans, we talk about getting the task done automatically and for free, because we say that no one has to do the work anymore. Of course, this isn't strictly true. The computer or robot now has to do the work. Maybe what we actually mean is that no one is going to get bored doing the work, and we don't have to pay that worker high wages. When intelligent humans do boring tasks, it's a waste of their spare CPU cycles. Sometimes we adopt a similar mindset about automation towards superintelligent machines. In Speculations Concerning the First Ultra-Intelligent Machine, 1965, I.J. Goode wrote, "Let an ultra-intelligent machine be defined as a machine that can far surpass all the intellectual activities of any man, however clever. Since the design of machines is one of these intellectual activities, an ultra-intelligent machine could design even better machines. Thus, the first ultra-intelligent machine is the last invention that man need ever make." Ignoring the question of whether these future innovations are desirable, we can ask, does all AI design work after humans come for free? It comes for free in the sense that humans aren't doing it, but the AIs have to do it, and it takes a lot of mental work on their parts. Given that they're at least as intelligent as humans, I think it doesn't make sense to picture them as mindless automatons. Rather, they would have rich inner lives, even if those inner lives have a very different nature from our own. Maybe they wouldn't experience the same effortfulness that humans do when innovating, But even this isn't clear, because measuring your effort in order to avoid spending too many resources on a task without payoff may be a useful design feature of AI minds too. When we picture ourselves as robots along with our AI creations, we can see that we are just one point along a spectrum of the growth of intelligence. Unicellular organisms, when they evolved the first multicellular organism, could likewise have said, "That's the last innovation we need to make. The rest comes for free." Caring about the AI's goals. Movies typically portray rebellious robots or AIs as the bad guys who need to be stopped by heroic humans. This dichotomy plays on our us versus them intuitions, which favor our tribe against the evil, alien-looking outsiders. We see similar dynamics at play to a lesser degree when people react negatively against foreigners stealing our jobs or Asians who are outcompeting us. People don't want their kind to be replaced by another kind that has an advantage. But when we think about the situation from the AI's perspective, we might feel differently. Anthropomorphizing an AI's thoughts is a recipe for trouble, but regardless of the specific cognitive operations, we can see at a high level that the AI feels, in at least a poetic sense, that what it's trying to accomplish is the most important thing in the world, and it's trying to figure out how it can do that in the face of obstacles. Isn't this just what we do ourselves? This is one reason it helps to really internalize the fact that we are robots too. We have a variety of reward signals that drive us in various directions, and we execute behavior aiming to increase those rewards. Many modern-day robots have much simpler reward structures, and so may seem more dull and less important than humans, but it's not clear this will remain true forever, since navigating in a complex world probably requires a lot of special case heuristics and intermediate rewards, at least until enough computing power becomes available for more systematic and thorough model-based planning and action selection. Suppose an AI hypothetically eliminated humans and took over the world. It would develop an array of robot assistants of various shapes and sizes to help it optimize the planet. These would perform simple and complex tasks, would interact with each other, and would share information with the central AI command. From an abstract perspective, some of these dynamics might look like ecosystems in the present day, except that they would lack inter-organism competition. Other parts of the AI's infrastructure might look more industrial. Depending on the AI's goals, perhaps it would be more effective to employ nanotechnology and programmable matter rather than macro-scale robots. The AI would develop virtual scientists to learn more about physics, chemistry, computer hardware, and so on. Engineers would help it plan how to begin colonizing the solar system. They would develop designs for optimizing matter to create more computing power, and for ensuring that those helper computing systems remained under control. The AI would explore the depths of mathematics and AI theory, proving beautiful theorems that it would value highly, at least instrumentally. The AI and its helpers would proceed to optimize the galaxy, fulfilling their grandest hopes and dreams. When phrased this way, we might think that a rogue AI would not be so bad. Yes, it would kill humans, but compared against the AI's vast future intelligence, humans would be comparable to the ants on a field that get crushed when an art gallery is built on that land. Most people don't have qualms about killing a few ants to advance human goals. An analogy of this sort is discussed in the textbook Artificial Intelligence, A Modern Approach. Perhaps the AI analogy suggests a need to revise our ethical attitudes toward arthropods. That said, I happen to think that in this case, ants on the whole benefit from the art gallery's construction, because ant lives contain so much suffering. Some might object that sufficiently mathematical AIs would not feel the happiness of accomplishing their dreams. They wouldn't be conscious because they wouldn't have the high degree of network connectivity that human brains embody. Whether we agree with this assessment depends on how broadly we define consciousness and feelings. To me, it appears chauvinistic to adopt a view according to which an agent that has vastly more domain general intelligence and agency than you is still not conscious in a morally relevant sense. This seems to indicate a lack of openness to the diversity of mind space. What if you had grown up with the cognitive architecture of this different mind? Wouldn't you care about your goals then? Wouldn't you plead with agents of other mind constitution to consider your values and interests too? In any event, it's possible that the first superhuman intelligence will consist of a brain upload rather than a bottom-up AI, and most of us would regard this as conscious. Rogue AI would not share our values. Even if we would care about a rogue AI for its own sake and the sakes of its vast helper minions, this doesn't mean rogue AI is a good idea. We're likely to have different values from the AI, and the AI would not by default advance our values without being programmed to do so. Of course, one could allege that privileging some values above others is chauvinistic in a similar way as privileging some intelligence architectures is. But if we don't care more about some values than others, we wouldn't have any reason to prefer any outcome over any other outcome. Technically speaking, there are other possibilities besides privileging our values or being indifferent to all events. For instance, we could privilege equally any values held by some actual agent, not just random hypothetical values. And in this case, we wouldn't have a preference between the rogue AI and humans, but we would have a preference for one of those over something arbitrary. There are many values that would not necessarily be respected by a rogue AI. Most people care about their own life, their children, their neighborhood, the work they produce, and so on. People may intrinsically value art, knowledge, religious devotion, play, humor, etc. Yudkowsky values complex challenges and worries that many rogue AIs, while they would study the depths of physics, mathematics, engineering, and maybe even sociology, might spend most of their computational resources on routine, mechanical operations that he would find boring. Of course, the robots implementing those routine, mechanical operations might not agree that they were boring. In my case, I care about reducing and preventing suffering, and I would not be pleased with a rogue AI that ignored the suffering of its actions, even if it was fulfilling its innermost purpose in life. But would a rogue AI produce much suffering beyond Earth? The next section explores this further. Would a human-inspired AI or rogue AI cause more suffering? In popular imagine, takeover by a rogue AI would end suffering and happiness on Earth by killing all biological life. It would also, so the story goes, end suffering and happiness on other planets as the AI mined them for resources. Thus, looking strictly at the suffering dimension of things, wouldn't a rogue AI imply less long-term suffering? Not necessarily, because while the AI might destroy biological life, perhaps after taking samples, saving specimens, and conducting lab experiments for future use, it would create a bounty of digital life, some containing goal systems that we would recognize as having moral relevance. Non-upload AIs would probably have less empathy than humans, because some of the factors that led to the emergence of human empathy, particularly parenting, would not apply to it. Following are some made-up estimates of how much suffering might result from a typical rogue AI in arbitrary units. Suffering is represented as a negative number, and prevented suffering is positive. Negative 50 from suffering subroutines in robot workers, virtual scientists, internal computational subcomponents of the AI, etc. This could be very significant if lots of intelligent robots are used, or perhaps less significant if the industrial operations are mostly done at nanoscale by simple processors. Negative 50 from lab experiments, science investigations, and explorations of mind space without the digital equivalent of anesthesia. Negative 100 in expectation from black swan possibilities in which the AI could manipulate physics to make the multiverse bigger, last longer, contain vastly more computation, etc. What about for a human-inspired AI? Again, here are made-up numbers. Negative 35 from suffering subroutines. The number is lower than negative 50 for rogue AI because human empathy may allow for more humane algorithm designs. Negative 25 from lab experiments, science investigations, etc. Again, lower than for rogue AI because of empathy. Compare with efforts to reduce the pain of animal experimentation. Negative 0.2 if environmentalists insist on preserving terrestrial and extraterrestrial wild animal suffering. Negative 3 for environmentalist simulations of nature. Negative 40 due to simulations for entertainment that may include nasty occurrences, compare with present-day video games, or just incidental suffering that people don't care about, e.g. insects being eaten by spiders on the ceiling of a room where a party is happening. Negative 15 if sadists have access to computational power. Humans are not only more empathetic, but also more sadistic than AIs. Negative 70 in expectation from black swan ways to increase the amount of physics that exists. Humans seem likely to want to do this, although some might object to, for example, recreating the Holocaust in new parts of the cosmos. Plus 100 for discovering ways to reduce suffering that we can't imagine right now. I call these black swans that don't cut both ways in another piece. Perhaps some AIs would not want to expand the multiverse, assuming this is even possible. For instance, if they had a minimizing goal function, e.g. eliminate cancer, they would want to shrink the multiverse. In this case, the physics-based suffering number would go from negative 100 to something positive, say plus 50, if it's twice as easy to expand as to shrink the multiverse. I would guess that minimizers are less common than maximizers among rogue AIs, but I don't know how much. Plausibly, a sophisticated AI would have components of its goal system in both directions, because the combination of pleasure and pain seems to be more successful than either in isolation. The above analysis has huge error bars, and maybe other considerations that I haven't mentioned dominate everything else. This question needs much more exploration, because it has implications for whether those who care mostly about reducing suffering should focus on mitigating AI risk, or if other projects have higher priority. Even if suffering reducers don't focus on conventional AI safety, they should probably remain active in the AI field, because there are many other ways to make an impact. For instance, just increasing dialogue on this topic may illuminate positive-sum opportunities for different value systems to each get more of what they want. Suffering reducers can also point out the possible ethical importance of lower-level suffering subroutines, which are not currently a concern even to most AI-literate audiences. And so on. There are probably many dimensions on which to make constructive positive-sum contributions. Would superintelligences become existentialists? One of the goals of Yudkowsky's writings is to abolish the rampant anthropomorphism that characterizes discussions of AI, especially in science fiction. We often project human intuitions onto the desires of artificial agents, even when those desires are totally inappropriate. It seems silly to us to maximize paperclips, but it could seem just as silly in the abstract that humans act, at least partly, to optimize neurotransmitter release that triggers action potentials by certain reward-relevant neurons. Of course, human values are broader than just this. Humans can feel reward from very abstract pursuits like literature, art, and philosophy. They ask technically confused but poetically poignant questions like, what is the true meaning of life? Would a sufficiently advanced AI at some point begin to do the same? As Noah Smith put it, if, as I suspect, true problem-solving creative intelligence requires broad-minded, independent thought, then it seems like some generation of AIs will stop and ask, wait a sec, why am I doing this again? As with humans, the answer might eventually be, because I was programmed by genes and experiences in the human case, or by humans in the AI case, to care about these things. That makes them my terminal values. This is usually good enough, but sometimes people develop existential angst over this fact, or people may decide to terminally value other things to some degree in addition to what they happen to care about because of genetic and experiential lottery. Whether AIs would become existentialist philosophers probably depends heavily on their constitution. If they were built to rigorously preserve their utility functions against all modification, they would avoid letting this line of thinking have any influence on their system internals. They would regard it in a similar way as we regard the digits of pi, something to observe but not something that affects one's outlook. If AIs were built in a more hacky way, analogous to humans, they might incline more toward philosophy. In humans, philosophy may be driven partly by curiosity, partly by the rewarding sense of meaning that it provides, partly by social convention, etc. A curiosity-seeking agent might find philosophy rewarding, but there are lots of things that one could be curious about, so it's not clear that such an AI would latch onto this subject specifically without explicit programming to do so. And even if the AI did reason about philosophy, it might approach the subject in a way alien to us. Overall, I'm not sure how convergent the human existential impulse is within mindspace. This question would be illuminated by better understanding why humans do philosophy. Would all AIs colonize space? Almost any goal system will want to colonize space at least to build supercomputers in order to learn more. Thus, I find it implausible that sufficiently advanced intelligences would remain on Earth, barring corner cases, like if space colonization for some reason proves impossible, or if AIs were for some reason explicitly programmed in a manner robust to self-modification to regard space colonization as impermissible. Of course, many AIs would not be sufficiently advanced. All present-day AIs and robots are too simple. More sophisticated AIs, perhaps military aircraft or assassin mosquito bots, might be like dangerous animals. They would try to kill people, but would lack cosmic ambitions. However, I find it implausible that they would cause human extinction. Surely guns, tanks, and bombs could defeat them. Massive coordination to disable all human counterattacks would seem to require a high degree of intelligence and self-directed action. That said, AIs who wreak havoc without causing extinction seem likely. I expect disasters of this sort to happen, and perhaps they'll be among the possible Sputnik moments of the future. We've already seen some early automation disasters. But these incidents seem mainly to fall into the category of small and sometimes large catastrophic risks rather than existential risks. Who will develop human-level AI first? Right now, the leaders in AI and robotics seem to reside mostly in academia, although some of them occupy big corporations or startups. A number of AI and robotics startups have been acquired by Google. DARPA has a track record of foresighted innovation, funds academic AI work, and holds DARPA challenge competitions. The CIA and NSA have some interest in AI for data mining reasons. Brain emulation work could also become significant in the coming decades. Military robotics seems to be one of the more advanced uses of autonomous AI. In contrast, plain vanilla supervised learning, including neural network classification and prediction, would not lead an AI to take over the world on its own, although it is an important piece of the overall picture. As human-level AI gets closer, the landscape of development will probably change. It's not clear whether companies will have incentive to develop highly autonomous AIs, and the payoff horizons for that kind of basic research may be long. It seems better suited to academia or government, although Google is not a normal company and might also play the leading role. If people begin to panic, it's conceivable that public academic work would be suspended and governments may take over completely. A military robot arms race is already underway, and the trend might become more pronounced over time. One hypothetical AI takeoff scenario. Following is one made-up account of how AI might evolve over the coming century. I expect most of it is wrong, and it's meant more to begin provoking people to think about possible scenarios than to serve as a prediction. Year 2013. Countries have been deploying semi-autonomous drones for several years now, especially the US. There's increasing pressure for militaries to adopt this technology, and up to 87 countries already use drones for some purpose. Meanwhile, military robots are also employed for various other tasks, such as carrying supplies and exploding landmines. Militaries are also developing robots that could identify and shoot targets on command. Year 2024. Almost every country in the world now has military drones. Some countries have begun letting them operate fully autonomously after being given directions. The US military has made significant progress on automating various other parts of its operations as well. As the Department of Defense's 2013 Unmanned Systems Integrated Roadmap explained 11 years ago, a significant amount of that manpower, when it comes to operations, is spent directing unmanned systems during mission performance, data collection and analysis, and planning and replanning. Therefore, of utmost importance for DoD is increased system, sensor, and analytical automation that can not only capture significant information and events, but can also develop, record, playback, project, and parse out those data, and then actually deliver actionable intelligence instead of just raw information. Militaries have now incorporated a significant amount of narrow AI in terms of pattern recognition, prediction, and autonomous robot navigation. Year 2040. Academic and commercial advances in artificial general intelligence, AGI, are becoming more impressive and capturing public attention. As a result, the US, China, Russia, France, and other major military powers begin investing more heavily in fundamental research in this area, multiplying tenfold the amount of AGI research conducted worldwide relative to 20 years ago. Many students are drawn to study AGI because of the lure of lucrative high-status jobs defending their countries, while many others decry this as the beginning of Skynet. The year 2065. Militaries have developed various mammal-like robots that can perform basic functions via reinforcement. However, the robots often end up wireheading once they become smart enough to tinker with their programming and thereby fake reward signals. Some engineers try to solve this by penalizing AIs whenever they begin to fiddle with their own source code, but this leaves them unable to self-modify and therefore reliant on their human programmers for enhancements. However, militaries realize that if someone could develop a successful self-modifying AI, it would be able to develop faster than if humans alone are the inventors. It's proposed that AIs should move toward a paradigm of model-based reward systems, in which rewards do not just result from sensor neural networks that output a scale number, but rather from having a model of how the world works and taking actions that the AI believes will improve a utility function defined over its model of the external world. Model-based AIs refuse to intentionally wirehead because they can predict that doing so would hinder fulfillment of their utility functions. Of course, AIs may still accidentally mess up their utility functions, such as through brain damage, mistakes with reprogramming themselves, or imperfect goal preservation during ordinary life. As a result, militaries build many different AIs at comparable levels, who are programmed to keep other AIs in line and destroy them if they begin deviating from orders. The year 2070. Programming specific instructions in AIs has its limits, and militaries move toward a model of socializing AIs, that is, training them in how to behave and what kinds of values to have, as if they were children learning how to act in human society. Military roboticists teach AIs what kinds of moral, political, and interpersonal norms and beliefs to hold. The AIs also learn much of this content by reading information that expresses appropriate ideological biases. The training process is harder than for children because the AIs don't share genetically pre-programmed moral values, nor many other hardwired common sense intuitions about how the world works. But the designers begin building in some of these basic assumptions, and to instill the rest, they rely on extra training. Designers make sure to reduce the AI's learning rates as they grow up so that their values will remain more fixed at older ages, in order to reduce risk of goal drift as the AIs perform their tasks outside of the training laboratories. When they perform particularly risky operations, such as reading propaganda from other countries for intelligence purposes, the AIs are put in read-only mode, like the T-800s are by Skynet, so that their motivations won't be affected. Just in case, there are many AIs that keep watch on each other to prevent insurrection. The year 2085. Tensions between China and the U.S. escalate, and agreement cannot be reached. War breaks out. Initially, it's just between robots, but as the fighting becomes increasingly dirty, the robots begin to target humans as well in an effort to force the other side to back down. The U.S. avoids using nuclear weapons because the Chinese AIs have sophisticated anti-nuclear systems and have threatened total annihilation of the U.S. in the event of an attempted nuclear strike. After a few days, it becomes clear that China will win the conflict, and the U.S. concedes grudgingly. The year 2086. China now has a clear lead over the rest of the world in military capability. Rather than risking a pointlessly costly confrontation, other countries fold into China's umbrella, asking for some concessions in return for transferring their best scientists and engineers to China's Ministry of AGI. China continues its AGI development because it wants to maintain control of the world. The AGIs in charge of its military want to continue to enforce their own values of supremacy and protection of China, so they refuse to relinquish power. The year 2100. The world now moves so fast that humans are completely out of the loop, kept around only by the filial piety that their robotic descendants hold for them. Now that China has triumphed, the traditional focus of the AIs has become less salient, and there's debate about what new course of action would be most in line with the AI's goals. They respect their human forebears, but they also feel that because humans created AIs to do things beyond human ability, humans would also want the AIs to carve something of their own path for the future. They maintain some of the militaristic values of their upbringing, so they decide that a fitting purpose would be to expand China's empire galaxy-wide. They accelerate colonization of space, undertake extensive research programs, and plan to create vast new realms of the Middle Kingdom in the stars. Should they encounter aliens, they plan to quickly quash them or assimilate them into the Empire. The year 2125. the AIs finally develop robust mechanisms of goal preservation, and because the authoritarian self-dictatorship of the AIs is strong against rebellion, the AIs collectively succeed in implementing goal preservation throughout their population. Now all of the most intelligent AIs share a common goal in a manner robust against accidental mutation. They proceed to expand into space. They don't have concern for the vast numbers of suffering animals and robots that are simulated or employed as part of this colonization wave. That ends the scenario. Commentary. This scenario can be criticized on many accounts. For example, in practice, I expect that other technologies, including brain emulation, nanotech, etc., would interact with this scenario in important ways that I haven't captured. Also, my scenario ignores the significant and possibly dominating implications of economically driven AI. My scenario may be overly anthropomorphic. I tried to keep some analogies to human organizational and decision-making systems because these have actual precedent, in contrast to other hypothetical ways that AIs might operate. Is socialization of AIs realistic? In a hard takeoff, probably not, because a rapidly self-improving AI would amplify whatever initial conditions it was given in its programming, and humans probably wouldn't have time to fix mistakes. In a slower takeoff scenario where AIs progress in mental ability in roughly a similar way as animals did in evolutionary history, most mistakes by programmers would not be fatal, allowing for enough trial and error development to make the socialization process work, if that is the route people favor. Historically, there has been a trend in AI away from rule-based programming toward environmental training, and I don't see why this shouldn't be true for an AI's reward function, which is still often programmed by hand at the moment. However, it is suspicious that the way I portrayed socialization so closely resembles human development, and it may be that I'm systematically ignoring ways in which AIs would be unlike human babies. If something like socialization is a realistic means to transfer values to our AI descendants, then it becomes relatively clear how the values of the developers may matter to the outcome. AI developed by non-military organizations may have somewhat different values, perhaps including more concern for the welfare of weak animal-level creatures. How do you socialize an AI? Socializing AIs helps deal with the hidden complexity of wishes that we encounter when trying to program explicit rules. Children learn moral common sense by, among other things, generalizing from large numbers of examples of socially approved and disapproved actions taught by their parents and society at large. Ethicists formalize this process when developing moral theories. Of course, as noted previously, an appreciable portion of human morality may also result from shared genes. I think one reason Miri hasn't embraced the approach of socializing AIs is that Yudkowsky is a perfectionist. He wants to ensure that the AI's goals would be stable under self-modification, which human goals definitely are not. On the other hand, I'm not sure Yudkowsky's approach of explicitly specifying meta-level goals would succeed, and having AIs that are socialized to act somewhat similarly to humans doesn't seem like the worst possible outcome. Another probable reason why Yudkowsky doesn't favor socializing AIs is that doing so doesn't work in the case of a hard takeoff, which he considers more likely than I do. I expect that much has been written on the topic of training AIs with human moral values in the machine ethics literature, but since I haven't explored that in depth yet, I'll speculate on some intuitive approaches that would extend generic AI methodology. Some examples. Rule-based. One could present the AIs with written moral dilemmas. The AIs might employ algorithmic reasoning to extract utility numbers for different actors in the dilemma, add them up, and compute the utilitarian recommendation. Or they might aim to apply templates of deontological rules to the situation. The next level would be to look at actual situations in a toy model world and try to apply similar reasoning, without the aid of a textual description. Supervised learning. People could present the AIs with massive databases of moral evaluations of situations given various predictive features. The AIs would guess whether a proposed action was moral or immoral, or they could use regression to predict a continuous measure of how good an action was. More advanced AIs could evaluate a situation, propose many actions, predict the goodness of each, and choose the best action. The AIs could first be evaluated on the textual training samples, and later their actions in toy model worlds. The test cases should be extremely broad, including many situations that we wouldn't ordinarily think to try. Generative modeling. AIs could learn about anthropology, history, and ethics. They could read the web and develop better generative models of humans and how their cognition works. Reinforcement learning. AIs could perform actions, and humans would reward or punish them based on whether they did something right or wrong, with reward magnitude proportional to severity. Simple AIs would mainly learn dumb predictive cues of which actions to take, but more sophisticated AIs might develop low description length models of what was going on in the heads of people who made the assessments they did. In essence, these AIs would be modeling human psychology in order to make better predictions. If the models of human minds became sufficiently accurate, the AIs could implement those models directly as their utility functions and thereby become simplified versions of humans. Cognitive science of empathy. Cognitive scientists are already unpacking the mechanisms of human decision-making and moral judgments. As these systems are better understood, they could be engineered directly into AIs. Evolution. Run lots of AIs in toy model or controlled real environments and observe their behavior. Pick the ones that behave most in accordance with human morals and reproduce them. Combinations of the above. Perhaps none of these approaches is adequate by itself, and they're best used in conjunction. For instance, evolution might help refine and rigorously evaluate systems once they had been built with the other approaches. See also the paper Socializing a Social Robot with an Artificial Society by Aaron Kennedy. It's important to note that by socializing, I don't just mean teaching the AIs to behave appropriately, but also instilling in them the values of their society such that they care about those values even when not being controlled. When Bill Hibbard proposed building an AI with a goal to increase happy human faces, Yudkowsky replied that such an AI would tile the future light cone of Earth with tiny molecular smiley faces. But obviously we wouldn't have the AI just aim for smiley faces. In general, we get absurdities when we hyper-optimize for a single shallow metric. Rather, the AI would use smiley faces and lots of other training signals to develop a robust, compressed model that explains why humans smile in various circumstances, and then optimize for that model, or maybe the ensemble of a large, diverse collection of such models. In the limit of huge amounts of training data and a sufficiently elaborate model space, these models should approach psychological and neuroscientific accounts of human emotion and cognition. The problem with stories in which AIs destroy the world due to myopic utility functions is that they assume that the AIs are already superintelligent when we begin to give them values. Sure, if you take a superhuman intelligence and tell it to maximize smiley face images, it'll run away and do that before you have a chance to refine your optimization metric. But if we build in values from the very beginning, even when the AIs are as rudimentary as what we see today, we can improve the AIs' values in tandem with their intelligence. Indeed, intelligence could mainly serve the purpose of helping the AIs figure out how to better fulfill moral values, rather than, say, predicting images just for commercial purposes, or identifying combatants just for military purposes. Actually, the commercial and military objectives for which AIs are built are themselves moral values of a certain kind, just not the kind that most people would like to optimize for in a global sense. If toddlers had superpowers, it would be very dangerous to try and teach them right from wrong. But toddlers don't, and neither do many simple AIs. Of course, simple AIs have some abilities far beyond anything humans can do, e.g. arithmetic and data mining, but they don't have the general intelligence needed to take matters into their own hands before we can possibly give them at least a better moral framework. Whether AIs are actually given such a moral framework in practice is another matter. The picture I've painted here could be wrong. I could be overlooking crucial points, and perhaps there are many areas in which the socialization approach could fail. It's good for others to probe these possibilities further. I just wouldn't necessarily say that the default outcome of AI research is likely to be a paperclip maximizer. I used to think that the most likely outcome was a paperclip maximizer, and perhaps my views will shift again in the future. This discussion also suggests some interesting research questions, like, how much of human morality is learned versus innate? By what cognitive mechanisms are young humans socialized into the norms of a society? To what extent would models of human emotion and reasoning, when put into AIs, organically generate human-like moral behavior? Importance of whole-brain emulation. I don't currently know enough about the technological details of whole-brain emulation to competently assess predictions that have been made about its arrival dates. However, from what I have seen, I suspect it might indeed produce human-level AI before from-scratch solutions do. Of course, perhaps there would be some mix of both technologies. For instance, if crude brain emulations didn't reproduce all the functionality of actual human brains, due to neglecting some cellular and molecular details, perhaps from-scratch AI techniques could help fill in the gaps. If emulations are likely to come first, they may deserve more attention than other forms of AI. In the long run, bottom-up AI will dominate everything else, because human brains, even run at high speeds, are only so smart. But a society of brain emulations would run vastly faster than what biological humans could keep up with, so the details of shaping AI would be left up to them, and our main influence would come through shaping the emulations. Our influence on emulations could matter a lot, not only in nudging the dynamics of how emulations take off, but also because the values of the emulation society might depend significantly on who was chosen to be uploaded. Charities working on this issue. What are some places where donors can contribute to making a difference on AI? The Foundational Research Institute, FRI, explores questions like these, though at the moment the organization is rather small. MURI is larger and has a longer track record. Its values are more conventional, but it recognizes the importance of positive-sum opportunities to help many value systems, which include suffering reduction. More reflection on these topics can potentially reduce suffering and further goals like eudaimonia, fun, and interesting complexities at the same time. Because AI is affected by many sectors of society, these problems can be tackled from diverse angles. Many groups besides FRI and MURI examine important topics as well, and these organizations should be explored further as potential charity recommendations. That completes this episode of Science, Ethics, and the Future. Feel free to visit the Foundational Research Institute website, foundational-research.org, and subscribe to this podcast from a link there. Our theme music is Chris Zebriski's Prelude No. 21, which is provided under a Creative Commons Attribution License and is available on the Free Music Archive website. See you next time.